at one level, evolution is very simple. It simply means that what is within emerges through a process of time and play of circumstances, forces. In other words, what's going to happen already is there within us as a seed. That's what evolution implies. So if we get to know the seed, we get to know what's going to come up, which no amount of surface analysis of events can tell us. By looking at a farmland, if we go and ask, or if we go and imagine, if we try to guess what's going to come out of this field, we may not know, we may think, we may have our own imaginations, we may have our own understanding. And supposing we ask the farmer what's going to come out of this field, and since he has worked on the field and sown the seed, he will tell us accurately. He'll probably tell us that, you know, this pond which is looking full of slush and mud, lotus is going to come out of it. Or a mango tree or a mangrove is going to come out, or lilies are going to come out, or new creation. And if we ask him that, why do you say so? He'll say, because I planted the seed, as simple as that. That's the logic of creation. So we may ask him, for proof, let me till the soil, let me dig the soil. And he will say, no, you can't do it now. There's a process to it. If you dig the soil, you are likely to spoil the seed from emerging. It has to grow this way. It has to be buried for some time. I have already tilled it, prepared it, and slowly as the seasons change, it will come up. So it depends on what level we look at things. So according to our Indian Shastras and according to Sri Aurobindo, takes it to another level altogether, there is a seed of the divine consciousness buried inside us. And that's why when we read the scriptures, it used to always fascinate me. Why do they start with the story of Vishnu sleeping on the serpent? Or, you know, and sometimes we say, I want to know about my story. How does it impact me? Just to know that how creation has begun. And if you read the Bhagavad, it's so fascinating. There's a great deluge which has taken place, and there is a waters, and on top of it there is a little leaf on which baby Krishna is sleeping. You wonder, what has that got to do with me? Me and my life. So that baby Krishna is the seed who is holding the whole creation inside, which will come up slowly by and by. So what is the seer trying to tell us? Seer is trying to tell us our origin is divine. And if our origin is divine, the end is going to be divine. As simple as that. So all evolution is essentially a manifestation. Manifestation of what? What is hidden inside it. But naturally, this manifestation is not sudden, not automatic. I mean, it is automatic, but not a sudden event that today the seed is buried, even a human seed. Actually, this is a very good example to look at the whole process. So, how are babies formed? This is a question, you know, children sometimes ask. And we rush to explain to them the biology of it. But how are babies formed? They start in the mind of the parents and the heart of the parents. It's not a biological process, it's a conception. Conception, if you look at it, conception starts from the mind, the heart. So parenting is like that. They decide. And all kinds of ideas, thoughts have gone into it. I'm not discussing what ideas and thoughts go into the making of a baby, but that. Then there is a physical process involved. And then there is a whole development cycle. And as the baby comes or is born, before that he crosses certain stages of development. And subsequently, when the baby comes into existence, into the great adventure, So there are 2-3 forces acting upon the child. One is the original conception of the parents. Again, I am not saying it's good or bad because it's an example. It's a human parent. Human parents have their own conception. It's acting upon the child. Whether we know it or we don't know it, the child knows it or doesn't know it, it's acting. But there's also, at that point of time, the conception of the world around what one should be. You know, when children grow into adolescence, this is their tussle. There is something which the parents want or wish or the child to be, and there is something called a social pressure upon a child. And there is the struggle and tussle. And then there is something which the child brings into this birth uniquely his own, and through all this shaping and beating and ultimately something emerges which we call as a fully developed human being. So when we look at life, it operates on these three levels at least. One is at the most surface level, where we see events, circumstances, parts, bits, here, there, fragments. And worse still, or you know, even more in a limited way, we see only our life and the events and circumstances of our life. Based on that, we try to understand the cosmos, understand creation, understand the creator. This is how we normally, ordinarily understand. That's at an individual level and surface events. But even at the individual level, we cannot understand things fully if we don't know what's going on inside the individual. As a psychiatrist, I know this very well. When you explore the inner world, it's a different world altogether. And the forces that are impacting that inner life. So we have to always understand the thing at a deeper level, which is a larger picture. So there is the smaller immediate picture, what we see on the surface as an event. And there's a larger picture, a universal picture. Whole universe is operating, acting upon the individual. That's why it's like today's children, for example, we see this, the age of transition. So many forces are impacting at any given point of time. And these things have very practical understanding to it. And then this larger or a universal picture, the universe which is acting upon the individual, there is a still greater something, the transcendent. So there are these three elements always involved in creation. That's how we see the Bhagavat and all these Purana. They will start from the transcendent, the unknowable mystery. And the Upanishads puts it in a very interesting way. You say it speaks of three different or four different states of consciousness, very beautifully described in Savitri in book 11. Those who want to read the detailed description. So one is the surface consciousness, outer, material, waking state. And because it's season of cricket, it's called Virat. It's vast material consciousness, material universe. Then behind this waking consciousness, there is the Hiranyagarbha, the womb of all things. And in Hiranyagarbha, all just like what we see on our outer surface, there is a whole world inside. A churning of thoughts, feelings, impressions, imaginations, inputs, all that is going on inside. So there is the Hiranyagarbha, a level at which before things emerge into the physical, they are taking shape inside. And it has very practical implication. That means if we really want to control things outside or change things outside, we must change inside. If you don't change inside and if you try to change outside, you will just keep on manipulating and keep on failing and keep on feeling frustrated because things happen from within outwards. So at the cosmic level, they are happening inside and there are levels of worlds behind this material universe. In us too, they are reflected, vital worlds, mental worlds as they are called. In us too, what happens on the surface is happening inside. Inside there is a khichdi because these are not... Outside we see material body, material objects very fragmented, very separate. But in the inner being, it's not separate. It's so much, there is so much of mixture going on. And that's why it's, you know, the advice given to those who are aspirants to yoga and even to children, be careful of the company you keep. Why this advice has been given? And we can see it when we meet human beings, how it impacts us. Outwardly, physically, nothing is happening. But there is an exchange of feelings. Even if we are saying nothing, we are just sitting together. That's why, you know, in yoga, one of the things which is advised is there in Guru Nanak's Vani. Everywhere it's advised. Mother speaks about you should be so careful about your friends. And in this Guru Nanak Kapad, it is given like that. Sadho man ka manityago kaam krodh sangati durjan ki taase ahanish bhago. Whose company you are keeping? Durjan. Satsang. Meaning thereby, when we are in the company of certain kind of people and forces, it's impacting us. The forces that help in the emergence of the seed. Divine seed is in everyone. We started with that premise. But why doesn't it fully blossom immediately? Because there is a whole complex set of forces acting upon us. And it can delay or it can hasten. It cannot eventually frustrate completely. But it can delay, it can hasten. This is the only, you know, work that is happening. So this inner level at which we have these layers at which mixture is taking place, that's called the dream state. And behind this dream state, there is yet another state. This dream state is all these different layers of universe at which creation is being formed, and behind it is the, or further beyond it is the transcendent, the pragya. That's the wisdom in which the whole secret seeds are held within. These seeds which will be released in creation. And we can use this word as the master stroke. Those who know card game, they know that it's called as Trupka Ikka. Have you heard this term? Anybody has heard this term? It is ace. And any sensible player never uses the ace in the beginning. He keeps it. That's held back in the heart of the divine. And at the right time, he introduces this new element, which upsets all the calculations of life, all our human calculations. And that's how a new emergence takes place. Because it's already been foreseen, it's already been planned, it's already been willed. But in manifestation, it takes place step by step by step. Look at Mahabharata, look at any of these scriptures, so beautiful. Mahabharata is a classic example. Everything has been foreseen in the consciousness of Krishna, how it manifests. And at one point when he has to suddenly, things are going to precipitate, he shows it, that look here, this is the original plan. You can be aligned to it or you can be out, fall out of it, but this plan will be fulfilled. So there is in this progression, there are stages and steps. Evolution proceeds to two basic steps and stages. Two major ways. Steps and stages would be many, but two major ways. One is when there is a slow process. Slow process, preparation is taking place. That is when, you know, a nice dish is being cooked. But right now somebody has gone to get the vegetables, somebody has gone to, you know, find the right quality of rice. All these things are taking place before the khichdi is cooked. So that's the preparatory stage when, and these are facts of biological evolution as well. So there is a lot of preparation taking place. And then there is what is known as a leap, saltatory. There is suddenly a leap. Because things have been prepared and looking at the things, nobody can imagine what's going to come out of it. But there is a plan going on that these things, how it is going to come together and bring out something new. Actually, everywhere you can see the same basic plan. You bring things, different elements, then you put them on fire. See, fire comes as a secret element and then you put them together and a tasty dish comes out. So this is how, and it's so true. In all creation, it's like that. When you put things inside, they are of one type. You know, you can't eat rice just as it is. But when you apply fire, it undergoes a change. It becomes edible. It becomes even tasty when you are going to put certain things in it. So the same way, there is a long period when humanity is prepared, or even animal consciousness is prepared. And when it is prepared for the next leap, suddenly there is a crisis of events, one after another. And then you see the leap. We see how it is described in Ramayana, that there is three types of human type, or you can say subhuman type, or the parallel human types, doesn't matter. One is the Vanara. Vanara is not really an animal. Shobindo speaks about it. There is an ape and there is an ape-like humanity. Shobindo speaks about this evolutionary process. That it's close to the apes. Very beautiful in its simplicity. Uncomplicated. And then there is the Rakshasi and the Asuric type, where evolution has taken a course, which is a dangerous course. But it has taken that course. And then there is the human-human. And eventually there is a sudden crisis of circumstances, and we see that the Rakshasa and Asura has almost wiped out. Not fully, he dwells within man waiting for his hour, but the kind of prominence he had, that's wiped out. It's being humanized, it's going through a process of humanization. And the Vanara evolves into the human type. He also exists, it also exists, but it exists as a kind of, it is taken up by the human. And then there is the leap. So we see that during the time of Rama, this crisis takes place. And eventually we see the predominance of the Asura and Rakshasa. That is the story. That's how the story goes. When Shobindo has immortalized it in one of his poems called Rakshasa, what does he ask? He asks the boon from Creator that only I should fall only to the animal or the human. He believes that they can't kill him. He is immune to the gods. He is immune to all the, you know, forces and powers. Even the Navagrahas, the stars that govern destiny, are below his feet. Why? Because the Rakshasa has to fall. The Asura has to fall. Rakshasa is taken up by the Asura, and Asura has to be taken up by the human and the animal. This is the process of evolution. And it takes a long time. Literally an aeon. If you look at the time scale through which Ravana has evolved, the Asura out of the Rakshasa, it's a long, long period, and he has to evolve. You cannot jump from one to the other. So all evolution is through several steps and stages, and it's so important to understand. Sometimes we are over-eager. That's why all evangelism, all, you know, trying to force convert people is so meaningless. So we try to push people through stages when they are going through a stage of preparation. It has to be taken in, absorbed, and then when you are ready, it will happen because the divine seed is inside you. But when people try to push across, that's not how it should be done. So the past layers have to be taken up in the present layer, integrated, assimilated. Then there will be the new thing which is coming in. That also has to adapt to this old, and the old has to accept the new. You see, Shobindo's message, one of the big problems is this. How beautifully Mother has put it in just one of her messages, where she says, in the eternity of becoming, each avatar, and who is an avatar? Avatar is the one who stands during the crisis to take the consciousness one step forward. In the eternity of becoming, each avatar is the forerunner of a future realization. And men have a tendency to deify the avatars of the past in opposition to the avatar of the future. And now Shobindo comes, and his message meets with the same resistance as of those who went before him. And then she says finally, but time will show and his work will be done. So this avatar is the one who stands at the doorsteps of that evolution. We have such a wonderful story of Matsavatar, Kurmavatar. Every stage of evolution, there is a crisis. And frankly, it is there even in individual life. I have seen so many times people when they go through a crisis. And my one advice is hold on. Don't give in, don't give up. Just hold on. If you hold on, if you know how to endure with faith, that's how the mother says. Endurance and faith, two things are required. If you know how to endure with faith, the seed inside will assert, and when the whole thing vanishes, you will see that you have taken a leap. At an individual level, the same thing happens. At a larger level, same thing happens. And then, of course, it happens because there is a push from within and there is a pressure from above. This is how the entire journey of evolution takes place. And when this evolution takes place, something changes. We all keep talking about change is the way of law of life, yes. But on the surface, we see change. But does this change have a direction? If you look at the larger picture, you will say, yes, there is a direction. Smaller picture, 100 years, people often say, kuch nahi badla. So I ask them that, you know, what is your time frame of nothing has changed? At least I know, being from the Air Force, there was a time when it was cool to have a cigarette in one hand and the drinks in another, hard drinks. And if you didn't take it, you were regarded as, you don't quite fit in. Non-veg was a way of life. And I have seen things change to an extent that now people have a smoker's separate room. It's not considered cool anymore. If somebody is smoking, you can tell the person, look here, it may be okay for you, you have your freedom, but it's hindering my freedom to live long. So things change. Why they change? Something changes inside us. Our understanding changes. And even at a human level, from child to adolescent to adulthood, that's why we often will hear a refrain from the parents, at least Indian parents. When you have a problem and children don't understand, what do they say? Ek din tumko samajh aayega. You will understand when you grow up one day. Isn't it? Heard of it? How true it is. Children don't understand, you know, what's going on. You don't understand me, mom, dad. Wait, you'll get it when you become a mom. When you become a mom, your mom may not be there, but you remember, mama ne bola tha. See this, why this change has come. Suddenly there is something which has grown inside. There is a new understanding which has come. So there is a kind of change. Change as a direction. What is the direction? If you look at human life itself, we'll know. What is the direction of the change? The direction of the change is that we do become a little wiser and a little stronger going through all the ups and downs of life. That's the minimum. Somebody who has crossed several stages. That's why, you know, often people ask that when somebody has died, why do you do, we do pranam or namaste? He's dead. So what is there to do? Well, the pranam is that 75 years you have endured life. It's not a joke. And that's why I fully believe that 25th marriage anniversary should be celebrated. It's not a joke. I mean, just think about it. It's amazing. It doesn't matter how. You may have struggled, of course. But you have held on. It's not easy. So why something changes? Growth. So this growth of consciousness is what is taking place on this planet. We do become a little wiser. We do become a little stronger. Of course, not all of humanity at once, but slowly this process goes on. But as I said, there are moments when there is a leap. And that leap periods are the leaps of when big changes are going to take place. A moment of transition. So when we think about moment of transition, we think, within my lifetime. This is one of our problems because we have a very short lifespan. But this moment of transition also is a few hundred years. We have to allow. After all, there are so many things which have to be sorted out and settled. So when people ask very often, this is the problem going on, that's the problem going on. India, of course, is a land of problems. And I have a different reason for it, since I have mentioned it. India is a land of problem because India wants to do PhD in the drama of evolution. So you can't deal with kindergarten problems. You have the problem of the utmost human nature. You have the greatest of sages. You have the worst of, you know, all kinds of people coming together. So what is the solution? There is one word solution: evolution. If people don't grow in consciousness, you may apply any external solution. It will only work for a short while. That's why Aurobindo says, mankind has a, it always tries to change things by government, by machinery, by organization. It believes. And then he says, but no power can save thee from what thou art within. Because what thou art within, that outside thee thou shalt enjoy. So the solution that comes up is that if there is a divine seed inside, and if we really want a solution, of course there are many of us, we love to talk about things and we are not really serious or concerned about it. We go back to our lives just as it is, unchanged. We of course, pastime of humanity is to criticize, complain, to curse. But if we are serious about the change, then change comes when we consciously participate in this evolutionary process. So again, we see two aspects of evolution. One is evolution happening unconsciously. That's how we see up till animal situation, circumstance. Of course, we are not talking of the process. Process, there is genes involved, no doubt about it. But genes describe the process and about the change of form. But that is also amazing. Random events taking place, mutations taking place. And somehow, they are leading from the first cellular organism to a complex human being. It's amazing. And if the more you read about it, the more you hear about it through experts, it's very fascinating. See, there is a direction. It's random and yet not random. There is something which is happening behind the random which we cannot understand. And if one really wants to understand why through all these random events, ultimately this is emerging, we have to go back to the chapter of the life divine cosmic indeterminates. That's where supermind comes in, that there is something which is pressing everything from behind and below, that whether you like it or not, this is a very big safeguard, which human beings sometimes feel very sad about, that, oh, divine is cruel, he doesn't listen to me, he does whatever he wills. Thank God there is hope because of that. If he was a wish-fulfilling tree, Kalpataru, God knows what would happen. Thank God he is not a wish-fulfilling tree. Sometimes he behaves like one. Because it is his way to make you come closer. As they say, you know, in Pondicherry this used to be told, that when you come in the beginning, oh, whatever you imagine, that happens. I had this idea, I wish there was this chola and chana, this aloo. That day dining room had chola and aloo. Seriously, huh? It was amazing. Then other day I said, whatever divine gives me, I'll accept it with so much of joy in the heart. You know, those moments when you feel you're ready to give everything at the divine feet. That day there were karela in the dal. The only thing I can't eat. Of course, I said, now you know I was caught. So I said, you're having a good laugh at me, I'll also laugh it off. Took it aside. I took it at that you are cutting a joke on me. You are not serious about. And then, as we grow, we discover something else. That heaven's wiser love rejects the mortal's prayer. Then you discover a different law. That in the beginning, the wish-fulfilling tree becomes as it were, that if you wish you don't get it, If you don't wish, you leave it, your life will be organized much better. So there are these two, three stages through which we grow. This is the kindergarten stage. When God is like, give me chocolate, take the chocolate. Get me a TV, get the TV. And if he is so happy, what a grace. Hold on. Then comes the next stage. When something else starts. I need not describe the heroic, the struggle. Things come to you, he lures and leaves us. They come near and then they are taken away. Or you are given that thing and you realize that this is not what I wanted. Or what I wanted through it, that slips away. So a new game starts. And then when you go through that game, there are three stages of sadhana. That's how I look at it. And then after some time, you learn. You learn that the wisest utterance ever, wisest prayer ever is, let thy will be done, and add it and not mine, to make sure that there is no confusion. That's one of the prayers, incidentally, of the mystic saint Kabir. He says, in my foolishness, I ask many things. But don't grant me anything which is not part of your will. Because we don't know. We ask. So ultimately, through all this we understand one thing, that there is a truth, an occult truth, as he says in Savitri, a truth occult has made this world. For Maya is a veil of the absolute. And this ultimately has a final say. It is going to have a final say. And if you look at the history, the larger picture, we'll see it is so. People often complain that, you know, they talk about this person, this community, that community. So what happened? If you just look about, you know, less than 100 years back, we had Hitler and Stalin. And we used to grow up in India hearing this story or the famous pad of Surdas. Kans aaye, Ravan aaye chale gaye. Meaning thereby that Kans and Ravan also came. And they were so powerful beings and they wiped away. And now we don't have to see that far. Just see 100 years back. And I give this example. This classic example of how evolution takes place from within. Just 100 years back, 1923, there was a kingdom. If you write it like a mythological story, it looked very fascinating. There was a kingdom, a united kingdom, whose sun would never set in the world. Okay. The rest of it you know. Set hi nahi set ho raha hai aur. Just in 1923, could anybody would have imagined this? Put yourself in that place. Even Indians didn't imagine. They were for supplicating, please.
That is evolution or
devolution? It is evolution. How it vanished. Evolution takes place. Now, why that was necessary, we'll touch upon that. That's the question. That why it came into existence. That we'll speak about. But today we see that the whole, where is the kingdom? And I personally relate it to one event. Now that's an aside, but since we are at it, I can mention it. The day Sri Aurobindo was brought to Alipur jail, if not dragged, at least with the thing tied, there was this victorious, you know, empire versus, I don't want to take the name, but Sri Aurobindo. They didn't say Sri Aurobindo. You know, that's how, if you read the proceedings, that's how it is. Empire. Sri Aurobindo comes out 1 year later, and the empire. See where the empire is. So we don't know. So why, but this thing, why in evolution these things happen? They happen to prepare us for the next step. That's what I was saying, that, you know, we are crushed by circumstances because something has to emerge. It's like the butterfly emerging. It's the seed of a tree has to, it has two layers, the outer and the inner. The outer has to be, you know, removed, and that process is very painful if you ask the seed. It slowly degenerates and gets into the soil as roots, and then the inner core comes up. We look at the same process applies here. Why Kansa is necessary? Kansa is necessary because if Krishna came without Kansa, people won't understand. They won't be prepared. And in Krishna's story itself, it is there. It's very fascinating. Since you touched upon it, so we can. It's an important point. Imagine Krishna comes and, you know, he does a magic. He's doing magic, no, since childhood. Suddenly he lifts his leg and this dies. All the stone walls, they all open. All the guards go to sleep. He's doing magic, no? So he could have magically, there should have been a thunder, a lightning, and it should have struck Kansa and Kansa would have gone. But what he does? He prepares all the, people, Gwal Bal as they are called, all those cowherds, community. He becomes one of them, leads them. They don't believe it is ever possible for Kansa to fall. He inspires them, leads them. So that when actually Kansa falls, these people are ready. A magic would never make them ready. Because we keep on expecting magic. But magic is not evolution. It's one thing to put my hand in the air and give 100 golden coins to someone. It's quite another that you earn it through the struggle and the battle of life. In the former, one becomes lazy. In the latter, one evolves and grows. That's how the divine works. It looks magical at times because you have gone through a long preparatory process. But what precedes before the magic is a logic of creation. This labor, this struggle, which is part of the evolutionary process. It presses, compresses human beings. Something within them must change. And when we change within, when nothing is changing outside. If things keep changing outside, we don't change inside. Why? Because everything is changing. And you're just enjoying. So whenever there is an intense evolutionary process, you will see that apparently nothing is changing outside. So what do? You have no choice but to begin to change inside. The story of these two people who are, admitted in a hospital. And one person has his bed by the side of the window. And the other has by the side of the wall. And he asks, "You can see, what are you seeing?" And he describes beautiful sceneries. And this man who is hopeless, but he feels good that, there is beautiful world out there. And one day, this person who was by the side of the window, he is taken out. And he says, "I want that place." When he goes to that place, looks across the wall, window, there is nothing but a wall. You see, there was nothing, but he filled it with all the beautiful colors inside and helped even the person who was right next to him. So when nothing is changing outside, that's the time when we can change inside. And that's why we will see that there is a long period. It's long only from the human point of view. Because there is a long preparation and then there is a leap. There are so many stories, individual, change that comes in people's life, how they evolve. We know how Tulsidas, who loved his wife like a mad person, one day it seems that he is so much wanting to meet her because she has gone to her parents' place. And he is bit by the love bug. And the river is in spate. He jumps. It's raining. But he goes. So she is, this is the original film story. She is on the first floor. And he doesn't know how to go. It's 2 o'clock or he can't, suddenly wake his in-laws and say, "I am love mad. I want to meet my wife." So he sees a little rope and climbs. It seems it's a snake. The fellow climbs and goes and meets her. Says, "See, I'm so madly in love with you." She is so shocked. What's gone wrong with him? And he says, "If only you could love God this much, you would have found him." Obviously, she's irritated. Nobody goes at 2 o'clock in this only romantic film. It's acceptable otherwise. So she rebukes him. That moment, and you know how he's transformed. So there is a moment when long period, mother uses this with the image of a chick inside the egg. Even in sadhana, this is very common. There is a long period when nothing is happening. So there is this chick forming in the egg. How long it will take, we don't know. You see this bamboo tree, for a long time it doesn't come out. But when it comes, it grows very fast. It has this amazing capacity. So we try to understand things on the surface, but there is a lot which is happening inside. And those who can turn within, begin to see, feel, sense. And then those who can go still further. That's what yoga is about. Joining the individual, the universal and the transcendent. Right now we are living in a fragment surface individuality. Obviously we can't understand. But if we discover the true individual, the psychic being as he says, and through that key discover the universal. And how to know the universal? You will start experiencing these changes inside yourself. Much before they are going to happen outside. That's how people make truly foresee events. Because they begin to experience within them what is going to take place at a larger level. That's how Sri Aurobindo could say in 1900, I think it was either 0, it's around that time. I may be not sure about the year, but definitely in the first 10, 15 years of the previous century. In the Renaissance of India, foundation of Indian culture, it is there in any case, that's around 1917-18, where he says the sun of India's destiny will rise and overflow India and overflow Asia and overflow the world. Now if somebody asked him, sir, you're living in a lotus-eating land, sun of India's destiny will rise when you are surrounded by the empire, you can't even speak out. That's because you're identified with the universal. And the next level is where you are identified with the transcendent. You know the new element which has been introduced into creation. And the whole creation has to adapt and adjust to now this new thing which has come. And it does, because it's the more powerful thing. It's the newest of the new. Of course, it will face struggle because past which doesn't give way so easily. So this is how evolution proceeds, meaning thereby before we see things on the surface, something has already gone into creation as a seed. That's what evolution is about. A seed which comes down from the pragya, the transcendent, enters through Hiranyagarbha into the womb of things, the dark womb of things. And then it begins to build pressure from inside. And then one day it precipitates, the crust opens, and we see that there is a new manifestation. This is the whole logic of it. I'll just read some lines from Savitri. And this, interestingly, is also when people talk about karmic law. So they talk about you did this and therefore this is happening in your life. I always find it so strange that as if you are totally disconnected with everything else. You did this and this happening in your life. So universe has no say. That's a big fallacy. All that transpires on earth and all beyond are parts of an illimitable plan. The one keeps in his heart and knows alone. So if you really want to know, the way is yoga. By yoga is meant to do an upside down asana, Sirsasana, not the physical one. But this which we think is so important, put it on the ground. Be grounded. And then you, when this is put on the ground, humility, then you can hope to join with the one. The one keeps in his heart and knows alone, our outward happenings have their seed within. And even this random fate that imitates chance, this mass of unintelligible results, are the dumb graph of truths that work unseen. The laws of the unknown create the known. So we have to learn, Mother uses the word reversal of consciousness. It happens in life, as I said, as we grow up, there is a reversal. As I said, the child when grows up into a mother or father, there is a reversal. It begins to see very differently. So that's how it happens. The events that shape the appearance of our lives are a cipher of subliminal quiverings. Just a fraction of it escapes, which really we surprise or vaguely feel are an outcome of suppressed realities that hardly rise into material day. They are born from the spirit sun of hidden powers, digging a tunnel through emergency. Suppressed realities. It's a very interesting subject. As psychiatrists, people talk about suppressed animal in you. But this is the suppressed God inside us. If you look at our life very closely, those passing moments when we have suddenly aspired for something and then it's gone into the background. Suddenly in a flash we have leaped out in an idealistic state to catch the moon or the sun and then forgotten about it. Passingly, a thought has taken shape and God has heard it. That story which I love to always recount of Narad, who asks God, I want to understand your Maya. So we should be so careful what we are asking. Krishna, I want to understand what Maya is. He says, really? Yes, really. So what does Krishna say? He says, a lecture I have given only once in my life. But I realize it's useless because people have memorized it but don't follow it. So now I teach them by experience. You want to understand Maya? I'm not going to give you a lecture anymore. What I had to say, I've said in the Gita, but I realize that everybody remembers it, nobody follows it. It's okay, anyways, I want to understand. He's very impatient because he's a teacher like Krishna. It's okay, I'll teach you. Can you fetch some water? We have walked long, my throat is thirsty. Narada says, okay, I'll just come. So he goes to fetch water. I'm sure some of us have heard the story. And then he gets entangled in a series of events. Narad gets married, he has 4 children. And then one day, something happens, there is a fire outbreak and everybody is gone except Narad. And he curses, what kind of God, such a cruel God, you made this world, seriously, whoever prays to you. And he's twisting and turning in the bed and he suddenly on the floor and he hears a voice in Narad, I am thirsty. You went to fetch water for me. What happened? So many times if we grow conscious, I have seen it. I mean, studying your own life, you see that there are moments when you have, and those are the moments which Shobindu speaks of, in moments when the inner lamps are lit. And we don't know when it will happen. They are not necessarily holy moments when you are sitting in a satsang doing bhajan kirtan. Nonsense. There are moments when suddenly there is something inside which, as if there is a door opens. In moments when the inner lamps are lit and life cherished guests are left outside, our spirit sits alone and speaks to its gulf. I'm sure we all have experienced, but we may not have given it much importance. But someone gives it a great importance. That's caught it. He catches us by those moments. We have forgotten it. And through that moment, and these moments multiply initially, suddenly, maybe after 5 years, 10 years, then slowly they crowd and crowd. Now when they are crowding, then they become intense. This what is digging a tunnel through emergency. And this is a state of circumstances come which turn life topsy-turvy and we wonder why you are doing it. Because these moments have suddenly their time of fruition has arrived. That's why Sri Aurobindo says that if, even should a hostile force cling to its reign, the hour must come of the transcendent will. For in the march of all fulfilling time. So how do we know those moments when there will be a cry for change in the earth? See, before Krishna's, around Krishna's advent, everybody is crying. They are sick of Kans. He's taxing 80%. Jizya tax, yes. On everybody he has put. And suddenly, you know, because people begin to cry and aspire and seek and long for the change comes. So this is the key. If you really want things to change, we must aspire for the change, be the change, go within, change within, grow in consciousness. This is the path. Well, if we wait for magic, then well, magic will happen, but we won't understand it. So I keep saying when people say, you know, what is there to see in the ashram? I see Pavitra Da, he came and he told, I'm just going for a few days to see the ashram. And after 20 years, suddenly his friend remembered and wrote a letter. What happened to you? You were supposed to see the ashram. 20 years later, he says, I'm still seeing it. Even if utopia comes, if human consciousness is not ready, it will mess it. So the divine knows when we are ready. We'll turn a utopia upside down. So that's why it is to be built by us. Divine can do magic, but that's not how we will deserve it. I mean, deserve by that I mean, even if somebody else makes it for us, we'll mess it up. And that always happens. Good parents always tell their children. They will have money or whatever. They say, you go, build your life. Make it yourself through hard labor and struggle. Children may not understand that time, but slowly they get to know that now we get it. But parents who just say, I want for 7 generations, that means you have opened a big abyss for the child. You will give everything and the child won't know how to receive it. So there is a, this preparation is to learn to receive it. So this is the, and then there is the digging of the tunnel through emergency. But who shall pierce into the cryptic gulf and learn what deep necessity of the soul determined casual deed and consequence? It looks casual, but it's not so, you know. One of the big problems of life is we give too much importance to things which have no importance, actually no importance, and very little things importance to things which are of utmost importance. So, casual deed and consequence, absorbed in a routine of daily acts. We know how Udhar Das' life changed. What he used to do? People would come, sometimes he would serve them wine. And when mother came to know, she said, I want to meet who is this Pinto giving wine to my children. And Pinto comes and he receives this name from Sri Aurobindo, Udhar. And see, much of this tennis ground and harpagon and all this furniture, how he became such an instrument of the mother. Absorbed in a routine of daily acts, our eyes are fixed on an external scene. We hear the crash of the wheels of circumstance and wonder at the hidden cause of things. Yet a foreseeing knowledge might be ours if we could take our spirit stand within, if we could hear the muffled demon voice. So basically it's the same thing that we have to go within and connect with the true seed, the seed of the divine inside. If we remain on the surface, then even if everything changes, we won't know about it, forget about participating in it. So that's why the importance. We, at our level, we can consciously collaborate and turn this process of evolution which is going through aeons into a conscious evolution. That's what yoga is about. And by conscious evolution, that's why Shrivindu says these three terms: individual, universal, and the transcendent. The ego individuality does not have the key to enter into the universal. The universality of the ego individuality is everybody should think like me. Everybody should be like me. That's the only way it can conceive. That's why all these plans of brotherhood and making everybody one fail. Because they are being done on the basis of the ego individuality. The mind catches an idea. However high this idea may be, it is bound to fail because the ego individuality next try, there are people who say that we should be tolerant and they are very intolerant. Some of the most intolerant people are the ones who keep talking about tolerance and that's how the cancel culture has come into existence. So you have to discover the true individuality inside, the psychic being. And through that door we enter into the universal consciousness. That's what yoga is about. And then the transcendent, which is the divine. So when we do that, then we consciously collaborate in this process of new emergence. And if we don't do that, well, it will still take place. Unfortunately, we may not be there to recognize it or enjoy it. That's what Mother says, that, we are going through this phase of evolution. And in fact, she says, should we just remain witness? Because the civilization that is ending was built on the basis of the mind. Should we just remain a witness? Passing comments like cricket match. Oh, usko ye shot marna chahiye tha. Oh, that ball should have been better. We can do that. Or should we not put all of ourselves into this process? And who are the ones who are ready? The mother says it. Whosoever, whose hearts extend beyond the little self and the little family towards something larger, greater, vaster. Whoever is carrying within him this dream that this world should become a beautiful place, divine place. Whoever is carrying this is the candidate. Whoever is trying to at least master oneself, even a little, master the animal, take it up and humanize it. Master the human, take it up and divinize it. Whoever is doing it in whatever measure is the candidate for the new creation, Superman. And for the rest, there is wise men talk and sleep. So, this is the large panoramic picture. If there are questions, I'll be happy to take them up. Yes, please.
What is the difference between buddhi and prajna?
Yes, so that's a very good question. So prajna is a state of concentrated light, concentrated knowledge. So what is concentrated knowledge? And buddhi is the one which discerns. Buddhi derives from prajna. So for instance, concentrated knowledge, it's like an intelligence which is all ingathered. A person who is sitting quietly, let's say a super intelligent person, he is all gathered in his concentration within. Now, if he has to act in the world, then buddhi has to become operative. So buddhi is like the frontal most thing. So that's why in the process of evolution, so prajna in the Upanishad is used in this sense. Original sense is that it's a state which is called as susupti also, where the entire transcendence, the concentrated light, the luminous intelligence, whatever we want to put it, the divine intelligence, if you want to say, is all in gathered and concentrated. We don't know what's going to happen, what is going to be released. It's there as the param jyoti. That's the original sense of the word prajna. But now we use it like we use the word buddhi, even for supermind, I have heard, that causal purusha or the vijnan me is nothing but the higher intellect. But that is the original prajna. So when it is said sthit prajna, that's how the word goes in the Gita. One whose intelligence is concentrated in the self. He dwells in the self, in the true self, of course, understood. So one who is there. That's why we can at most be sthit pragya. We are in that. And toward that, buddhi, because buddhi is a projection from that, can help us. That's why we see in the buddhi yoga that Sri Krishna advises. But this buddhi has to turn inward and upward and not be running on the surface, analyzing, concluding things based on these surface things. So when the buddhi turns inside and upward, inward and inward, upward, in the search for the original cause of things or knowledge, it doesn't matter which way we want to put it, then after some time, and then obviously then one has to practice equanimity, because if you are really interested in that, you should be interested in that, as simple as that. Nothing else should matter. That should be the state of concentration. And a time comes when this buddhi is upgraded, uplifted, and becomes one with that intelligence. And then the state is described that, you know, even if a volcano were to erupt, a nuclear bomb had to burst, you are not affected. This is the first step of Jnana Yoga. So buddhi is like a projection from the pragya, and in return to pragya, buddhi is a great help. Provided we don't just let it be thrown out for surface analysis, data analysis.
But, in conjunction with that, buddhi can be good or bad.
Yeah.
Pragya is always good. Or
pragya is always the supreme good. Because our idea of good and bad is very relative and it changes at stage. So buddhi, we can use the word good and bad, very true. But when it's turned inward and upward in a higher seeking, it automatically goes towards good. When it's turned outward and downward, it is durbuddhi or, you know, kubuddhi, all these words are used. Means it's a wrong use of buddhi. It's given to man for his ascension and evolution. But if somebody misuses it, ultimately it is destroyed. I mean, that's how the Gita also describes the path. When it's concentrated on outward and the downward, then on the desired self, then what happens is that krodh comes because you're frustrated. Then what happens? Kama. First there is kama. So buddhi justifies the kama. Any which way I want my object of desire. That's how Ravan proceeds. I want this object, I desire, and I want it immediately and now. So kama. Then out of kama, because it gets frustrated, there is krodha. Then krodhat bhavati sammoha. Then there is the delusion. And then there is smriti bhransha. You lose that sense of the self. And then there is total fall. So this is the path, one of the most illuminating psychological truths which the Gita reveals. It reveals many profound psychological insights. One of them is this. See, if kama, then krodha, then moha, then memory of the self, and then you fall. Yes, Arjuna.
So on the topic of evolution, you spoke on like an inevitable aspect of all of this, right? What will happen essentially. The more time that progresses, the more destructive things are, I guess, in terms of like human error. So when you're navigating that landscape, like how does this address that?
So as I said, what seems human error is on the surface. Okay? You're playing with atoms and blow out the world. It looks on the surface. But there is something within that will ultimately compel creation to use everything to fulfill itself. That's why if we have to navigate, because we will see the errors. But when you see the wisdom inside, which is operating through everything, then you discover something very interesting. That also Sri Aurobindo says very beautifully in Savitri, one of my favorite passages. He says, even through the tangled anarchy called fate, and through the bitterness of death and fall, an outstretched hand is felt upon our lives. In its unslackening grasp, it keeps for us safe the crown the Godhead promised to our struggling souls, the crown of conscious immortality. And then he says these lines, which are relevant to your question. One who has shaped this world is ever its Lord. Our errors are his steps upon the way. He works through the fierce vicissitudes of our lives. He works through the hard breath of battle and toil. His knowledge overrules our nescience. When nothing we can see but drift and bail, a mighty guidance leads us still through all. So we have two choices, either to have faith that, well, I don't see, I see the error, I see the danger, I see the destructive tendencies, but I have faith that there is divine inside and he will take care. This is one way. Or the other way is have knowledge. So for knowledge you have to take that journey. So faith is that, well, if there is the divine, and that's very logical, faith can be very logical, at least I started that way, that if there is a divine, and as they say, divine is the origin and in this creation, then evidently the end is going to be good because supreme good is inside. Simple logic. Also because omniscience, omnipotent. How he will do it, I don't know, I don't understand. But if, and if there is no divine in creation, then creation anyways doesn't make any sense. This logic, when I was 17 or 18, going through all these phases, came up because I had some of my friends in the medical college. In Pune, you have those joints where people give you, you know, charas for free. I mean, very little price. And there were students, 10% who used to go. They had competed, super brilliant students. But that's how they were destroying. And I used to wonder, why should one go and why one shouldn't go? All so... After all, if there is nothing but material reality, then they are doing a most logical thing. But if there is something more than material reality, then I am the most idiotic person if I don't find it. It's like I don't want to know what my true asset is. I'm putting in very commonplace language. If there is the divine and I don't know him, then I missed something most important in my life. If there is no divine, then nothing really makes sense. So that's the logic of it. So you can have a faith based on logic, or you can have faith instinctively. Instinctively we see, you know, at least we grow up hearing these things. Bali karenge Ram. Don't worry, Ram will do the needful, you know. Whatever you are going through, don't worry. He will. There is another very beautiful line in Ramcharitmanas, and I can't help, you know. So he says, Ho hi hai so hi jo Ram rachi rakha. I don't know if somebody has heard it or not. Ho hi hai so hi jo Ram rachi rakha, ko kari tark badhava isakha. So things will happen what Ram has decided. And what will all this mental debate help? And it's very interesting, you know, today only I was watching that episode. So when Ram is under Nagpash, now imagine what is that state. Imagine Sri Aurobindo physically withdrawing. What happened to the disciple? So, Ram is and Lakshman both are in Nagpash. So, Nagpash is a deadly weapon. It kills you. By morning, you are gone. And even Hanuman can't do anything about it. He tries. There is no way how to take out that poison. So, ultimately, he is advised that go and ask Garud. Garud is the, enemy of serpents. Pakshiraj. So he goes and calls Garuda. So before that, there is a samvad going on between Parvati and Shiva. Parvati says, Parvati has deliberately veiled herself from the knowledge. That's how nature, you know, as if she doesn't know. But always she knows, she is capable of knowing. She says, what's going to happen? How can you allow this? And he smiles. He says, you don't see the play? He says, what? I don't see anything. This is a hopeless situation. Ram and Lakshman both are now paralyzed. It's an imminent death. So he says, see, when Ram avatar took place and Vishnu came on earth, he got all his four Sankh, Chakra, Gada, Padma. They were his, you know, brothers. And the Sheshnag is Lakshman. And Lakshmiji is Sita. He says, do you remember somebody left behind? She says, yes, Garud. He says, he's very fuming. He wants his role in the play. So this all this Leela is to involve him also. He's very angry. So Hanuman goes and tells him, come. He says, I am not going to go. So he says, no, you are needed. He says, how do you know? Maybe the Lord wants to die. Why should I interfere unless he comes and tells him, tells me? So Hanuman says, see, we'll talk all this later. Can you just come with me? It's a life and death situation. Maybe, he tells him, maybe that's why he is doing the Leela, because he knows you are annoyed. And in the middle of the battle also he remembers and wants you to play your own part. So you see, this is one way to look at it, that we don't understand because we don't know the total picture. That's the repeated thing. So we use words like error, danger, threat, this may happen, that may happen. We talk about North Korea, we talk about deep state, all this. And these are reality. I'm not saying that they don't exist. But the last ace, trump card, is always with the divine. Don't worry. When he will use it, we don't know. Or you can know. You can know it. But that's a long process. You are identified, you will know. When Shurbindu was told that, you know, on 15th August, when Hitler wanted to destroy a whole fleet and it didn't happen, he suffered heavy losses. So they asked Shurbindu and she said, he almost called the bluff and succeeded. People believed that whatever he is saying is true. And when he was told that Hitler is making inroads, at one point Shurbindu says only this much: we will see. We will see. So you see, there is the divine in creation. We must understand it. And there is the divine in our life. We are forgotten because we are so much taken up by all the outer, the good propaganda and the bad propaganda. Both are propagandas. And therefore we are swayed. But we need to remember only one thing, that there is a divine presence in creation. That's all we need to know. When Shurbindu was asked about secret of sadhana, what did he say? That only two things you need to know. That there is a soul within and grace above. And Niruddha says, oh really? He says, yes. So if we live with this faith, and Mother speaks of they will be redeemed. You see, speaks about something akin to the last judgment, where you will see a lot of humanity collapsing. And she says, those who have faith will go through. She says, they don't know anything. They don't know about supermind. They don't know about, but they have faith in the divine presence in matter. That's all they have. They go through. So the take-home point of all this is, while we judge, analyze, because there's the way of the mind in ignorance, it loves to analyze, it believes it is very superior. That's the unfortunate part. It's okay to analyze and whatever it is, but when it believes, I know it all, so it's very arrogant. Those who want to do it. But most important thing that we must remember, the one thing needful, is that there is the divine presence within earth and in man. And wherever there is divine presence, wherever there is the divine, wherever there is Arjuna, Nar and Narayan, there will be the victory. So we should just try to become the useful instruments. Narayan will do his bit, but Nar has to do his bit. And the rest will unfold.
Being in the egg, ready to growing and suffering, one, you said, has to have faith. And breaking through the action when it's time, one has to have knowledge, you said. When is it time for each?
Yes, so they go together. Being inside the egg, you have anyways no choice to start with. So you have to start with faith. Even to know one must have faith, there is something like knowledge. One has to start with faith that if I do this practice, let's talk about yoga, it will lead me to knowledge. If one doesn't have that faith to begin with, one will be hesitating. That's why Sri Krishna says that yoga is not done by a hesitating mind. One goes two steps forward, two steps backward. So to start, one always starts the journey with faith. And it's true in any field. If I want to make a discovery of science and I'm dedicating my half of my life to it, I must start with this faith that there is something which I am likely to find. So journey starts with faith, but we may remain with faith forever. Where we are happy with faith and we don't put the next effort. So there is a whole passage in Savitri when Savitri is in search of a soul. she reaches a point where there are people who are happy with faith. And there is a line, happy who stand on faith as on a rock amid this, you know, passing circumstances and things, you know, this. So in this unstable life, one can stand on faith. But it's obviously not enough to have the knowledge, true knowledge, of course. One has to start with the staff of faith or the light of faith and move forward. Without faith, we cannot take one step forward. That's why faith is so important. Sri Krishna even goes on to say that man is his faith. The one who has faith, he finds Shraddha Vane Labhate. So man devoid of faith will not find. So faith is the starting point. But one may stay with faith and sometimes unfortunately change it into a belief system in which one understands nothing about what's happening, but has faith. And this faith can sometimes degrade into doubt because, you know, unless you have the knowledge, unless the faith is so deeply rooted. So faith must change into knowledge by the path, the yoga, the sadhana. So through sadhana we arrive at that in which we have faith. We have faith in the divine, let's say, or one or whatever, that, whatever. And that knows because it's omniscient, omnipotent. But should I stay with faith or can I cross over and become one with it? Those who say you can stay with faith, they create a gulf between the divine and creation. Because obviously there is the creator and there is creation and you have to just live with faith. So in Indian philosophical system, it's called as dualistic form of thought. And it changes into belief system in religion. Later on, fundamentalism, fanaticism, all this. Because, you know, I believe and my belief is ultimate. But there are those, Advaita system says, no, you can actually start the journey and you will arrive. So they don't so much sometimes emphasize on faith, but it is implied. You can't take the journey. If I say that I am going to New Jersey and somebody says, are you sure it exists? And if I say, I am not sure, but I am running, it will look so foolish. Obviously, it implies that faith is there. That's why one is not only undertaking the journey, but putting the effort. So in all effort, faith will be the first thing. But we may stay and stop with faith or we may undertake the journey. This is the difference. So the first has a tendency to change into religion and the other is spirituality. When you start with faith and undertake the full journey.
And then the second?
Second is when you take, that's what yoga is about. So religion and spirituality or yoga, what? Yeah.
So then knowledge becomes the steps that we take with faith?
Yes, you have to take. In life, anyways, there is no option. To tell you very frankly, about faith, doubt, debate, I am very clear. You have no option. Every day, every breath, we have faith. When I say, okay, tomorrow we'll go. What is it? It's implied that I'll see tomorrow. Faith is the stuff of human existence. We may even disbelieve in faith. Still, we are living with faith. See, this is the paradox. But again, like buddhi, our faith may be given to, as we say, you know, people have faith in dark cults. So that's different, that my faith may be in doubt, my faith may be in reasoning, my faith may be in analytical ways, but faith will be the starting point. And then the direction you take, whatever is your faith, as is your faith, so will your will be, and as is your faith and will, there you will arrive. So I may have faith in a dark satanic cult. People have faith. Jonestown tragedy, where people, you know, 700 people died, they took poison. So faith can be also, you know, darkened in earth nature. And then my will be in that direction. But if I have faith and I have a will, so will itself is a sign that it has chosen that I will arrive there. That's why it is said that man is his faith, and as is the sure idea and the faith in him that he becomes. So it's so important. That's why again we go back to why company is so important. Because company of people who can nourish your faith. Initially, faith is like a small little flame. So when the flame is very small, you have to put a little, you know, barricade around it, because otherwise strong winds can blow it off. But when the flame has changed into fire, then when the strong wind comes, what happens? This flame, fire rises, it burns everything around. So that's why in spiritual practice, the first step is that guard your faith. It's a treasure. Mother says, resist all temptation to lose it. And it, even Gita goes on to say that don't speak about it to people who are hostile and full of doubt. In Savitri, there is a line, speak not my secret name to hostile time. Because it's a state when, you know. But if the faith has become truly deeply rooted, and I'll tell you one of the signs that people don't have enough faith is when they try to convert others, honestly. I mean, why are you trying? You don't have sufficient faith. So you want to prove it to someone, why should you undo it? When you know that there is the divine, you know it that there is the divine not only in me, in everybody, and he is the one who is taking you along. So faith is so important, fundamental to our existence. But it can be clouded, it can be usurped. Hitler's people, they had faith in Hitler's words. Ravana's, army had faith in Vayam Raksham, that, you know, we'll defend ourselves. So it's a greatest of powers, if you ask me, because you can't live another day without this faith. So it should be guarded. It's very important to guard faith. And for that, people who feel doubts, who are full of, you know, all kinds of things in the beginning. Later on, when you are a fire, you will burn everything. If there is doubt in the atmosphere, it will be chased away like anything. But in the beginning, it should be guarded. Then the will. Will means now you will apply. I have faith that there is divine. But my life is going contrary to it. I believe there is divine, but I am shouting, getting angry at somebody. Then what does it mean? My will is not taking the course that my faith tells me. If there is the divine presence inside somebody, I would treat that. See, this is the basis of mutual respect. Also of self-respect. Why do you value yourself? Because there is a divine presence, not just because of your surface personality. Why do you value the country? People ask. Because the divine presence dwells there. Not for its own sake, oh, I am attached to the country. That's where the vital ego gets two kinds of nationalism. The vital nationalism, which Hitler stood for, and true nationalism, which is the spiritual nationalism. Every nation has its own mission to fulfill, and you must, if you are part of a nation, you must help to fulfill it. So faith will always be that starting point, but the next is will. If will and faith are at dissonance with each other, then life is terrible. So, but faith is the fundamental. Okay. Yeah, please.
So in the Supreme, where the mother wrote February 20th, 1956, the manifestation.
Yes, yes.
It says with Mona Sarkar.
Yes.
Which I am reading.
Yes. Wonderful book it is, yes.
So this is the path, this is straight to the goal, the mother says.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go and no realization, everything is done by the Divine Supreme.
Yes.
Path, but we need to know what the goal has to
be. Yes.
He has drawn the picture with Mona Sarkar.
Yeah. The crab-like crooked path and the straight path.
He drew the path with the conversation with Mona Sarkar.
So that's why it's important to walk the way. Faith is good. Walk the way. That's where the effort is required. Yes, please.
Is there favoritism in evolution?
There is in one sense, in the sense that, well, this is a very interesting question. Well, it's yes and no, both. But in the sense, there is no in the sense that everybody gets an opportunity. Yes, in the sense there are those who take the opportunity, they evolve. So, see, this is how Bali asks Rama. So, you know, I was reminded of that story. Bali and Sugriv, see, there's so much to learn from these scriptures. Bali and Sugriv are both vanara. It's not monkey, it's ape-like humanity. And both are powerful. Except that Bali has a little trick up his trade. If you get into a close combat, he is able to suck your energies because he has the Pishachik element inside. But that apart, Rama and Sugriv. Sugriv has a sandhi, friendship with Rama. And Ram kills Vali to keep up his friendship. So when Vali is on the deathbed, he says, I have a question to ask you. He says, ask. He says, Mai vairi Sugriva Piyara. You are being partial. You are the one who has thrown me down. I did nothing wrong to you. Whatever was my problem was with Sugriv. And you have chosen to kill me. What kind of an upholder of dharma you are? So there he reveals, he says, friendship with Sugriv is one thing, but basically it was necessary because of dharma. So dharma element brings in the impartial aspect. If just because I am friendship with the divine, friendship is a big word of course, but I continue to do adharma. So what happened? The gati is of Ravan. Ravan was also, had the great fortune of being a bhakta of Shiva. He was spreading the Vedas. He was known to, he is the one who popularized the Vedas during that time. But he took a path of adharma, at which point there comes a point when he uses Chandrahas against Ram himself. And then that is taken away from him. Shiva says, this is now the last limit that you have crossed. And the day he gets Sita. So it starts equally for everybody. So evolution that way is impartial. Bali had his chance, gets his chance. Sugriv has his chance. But Sugriv takes the chance, Bali misses the chance. It was not against Bali because his son, Angad, is taken up. It's not like fundamentally anything against a person. Arjun gets, and Karna, both are given chance. There is a very beautiful whole dialogue of Krishna with Karna. Many people may have heard about it. The dialogue goes that Krishna has shown the Vishwaroop and Duryodhan refuses. Everybody is given that chance. Then he goes to have food at Vidur's place and he's preparing to leave and Karn comes there. So Karn says, I want to meet your guest. He tells Vidur, Krishna, and he apologizes that I am so sorry that I know my friend has misbehaved. He tried to capture you, it's not done, etc. But I am sorry on his behalf. So Krishna says, it's okay. What has been decided has been, it's no more, the thing is not about me and my misbehavior, it's what he has done now. What had I asked? Only 5 villages. And so now you can't help it. Destruction is inevitable. But anyway, since you have come, why don't you come along with me? So he takes Karna along and Krishna says, I will drive the chariot, you just sit by my side. The first time he reveals to him that you are a Pandav. You are Kunti's son. And he says, you know, there is still one last ray of hope that you can avoid this war. This is how. He says, all that you need to do is, you are a Pandav. You come, they are your brothers. You will be the king, you are the eldest. So as per dharma, you will be the king. And with you not being by their side, Duryodhan will never fight the war. So there will be no war. So it's a very beautiful strategy. And Karna refuses. This is the last. He says, no, I am indebted to him, etc. So the moment he refuses that chance, you see the destiny takes 2 routes. One is the destiny of Arjun. He becomes the instrument. And one is the destiny of Karna, that he is lying on the ground. So there is a time when evolution is impartial. But there comes a time based on our own choices that we are on this side of the fence or the other side. And I believe this time through which we are living, these choices are being, human beings are being compelled to make the choices. And Mother gave this message 52 years back. She spoke of men, countries, continents. The choice is imperative, truth or the abyss. Right now, it's still that moment of choice, so it's prolonging itself. Divine gives a long rope. But there will be a time, as I said, that there is a leap in evolution, when many things suddenly collapse, because the divine withdraws himself from those elements. That's how they collapse. The beauty is, he doesn't have to do anything. That's why when people say there is no God, I often say, if there is no God, then you would not be standing here. Your belief and non-belief doesn't matter. But there comes a time when that's how Pralaya takes place. Nothing else. He just have to withdraw. That's it. It collapses because it has no support. It implodes literally. So this is a Kalkhand when we are there to make choices. This one period which will go on till 2028. Another period which will come around again. 2040s or 50s. Again, people have to make a choice. And this cycle will come more often. And then there comes a time when the divine just has to do nothing. Just withdraws quietly. And you'll see it will collapse like a house of cards. So what will collapse, what will survive, time will tell. Of course, we all can have our own intuitive sense. But for us individually, we have to see whether we make a choice, the right choice or not. The choice is to be on the side of the divine, and that means truth. Truth in its unfolding, not just a religious belief system. Yes, please.
What is this 2028?
I mentioned it in 2013 without knowing what's going to happen. But the reason if I look back, so I am connecting this age with Sri Aurobindo. And I have reasons. That talk that has been given on Mira was rightly mentioning about the supramental manifestation, how things change. Around 56, you see, world was on the brink of, those who remember Cuban Missile Crisis. I mean, I learned about it later. It was a push button thing. So 56 onwards, 60 particularly. You know, today we talk about International Yoga Day. It's documented since when did yoga become actually active. That's 1960. Counterculture movement, 1960. People wanting to explore alternate experiences, 1960. Indian spirituality in a big way, though it was initiated by Swami Vivekananda. But you'll see 60. So this age is connected with Sri Aurobindo. So what are the events connected to Sri Aurobindo? 2014, the mothers coming to India. So 2013, I was quietly saying that India is going to rise. Shakti is coming here. We thought it's this person or that person, but it's about the divine making a choice. Then 20, after that, you see series of interesting events. The world war, the ending of the world war. There was almost a repeat. 100 years of the flu. Can you imagine? What did the flu do? It prepared it in its own way. People made choices, but of course, that's one part of it. 2019 was the year of the Superman. Descent of Superman, 50 years. And then 2020. 2020 is Mother's final arrival. 2022, Sri Aurobindo's 150th year. Then 25, the emergence of Savitri, 75 years. 26, 100 years of the Siddhi Day, 28, Mother's 150th year. Now, it may sound like, oh, I'm connecting the date, but you'll see, very intense this period is going to be. And then again, it'll come again. It'll go on like this, till eventually a time will come. And Mother has incidentally spoken about it. She said that later on a time will come when the action of the new consciousness will be like the last judgment. She used the word. She says, those who have faith in the divine sacrifice in matter, they will be lifted up into the new creation, integrated with it. Then there are those who will be raised into higher humanity. They are not ready for that ultimately, but they will become chain. And then there is a whole perverted section of humanity that will collapse, vanish. And there is an animal type of humanity will get integrated with the animal kingdom. I had a very elaborate dream vision about this. So I am personally absolutely convinced without any doubt. Even people who are too much into religion, it's not necessary that they have the hope. I was trying to, in that dream vision, tell them also, come out. There were three tires inside a volcano. I was telling them, come out, this is going to burst. And while people below, they came out, they believed. But those sitting in that third tire, I won't name the organizations, but it represents the highest that old world religion could represent. And they were quiet, nobody is bothered. Then I come out and then the whole thing bursts. And there's the lava which comes and rolls on. That time I see on the left side, there's a whole group of humanity. In that vision, it was like ashram. But ashram is not just the physical ashram, but those connected, which mother later on says. And they are watching the whole play in that ethereal space. And I said, this is very nice, cool, very protected zone. Even in that, I am thinking, oh, wow, this is fantastic. And then that lava rolls down and the right little couple of steps before me, it stops like a ball. And then I touch it. It's so amazing, that whole clay, that feel. And two roses drop on it. And I hear this voice from the mother. This is the clay of which the new creation will be made. So personally, I have no doubt. This was in 1990s. I had seen this whole thing. So we can talk. But this is how it's going to be. This is just a question of time. So for us, it's a matter of choice. And I know this choice cannot be made by convincing people externally. There are those who will make it. We don't know who will make it. But as we are saying, mere faith is wonderful. But will should also be there in whatever way. Little effort. Shobinda said, some effort you have to put. Why? Because then grace can use that little point of support to act. Not that the divine depends upon our effort, but that little effort, maybe to sit quietly and just remember for some time the mother. Maybe just to, one cannot meditate, doesn't matter. One is trying little bit. One is trying to at least read some effort. And then that becomes a point of support. That is the story of the five villages that Sri Krishna asked. Give me five villages, that's enough. But Duryodhana knows, this fellow is dangerous. Today I'll give five villages, he is going to take everything. What he didn't know was, anyways, he will take everything. So if we allow the divine, and he says, I won't give you land even worth, pinpoint, I won't give even that much. So it is so true that you allow a little opening to the divine. And the rest he will take care. But that is our part, however little we should do it. We are going to see a lot of upheaval in time to come. And naturally, if you look at humanity, where it doesn't even recognize the divine. When mother was asked this in volume 3, she says, what is the attitude of the average human being even today? Does he even care about the divine? People care about religion. They care about everything. But do they really care about the divine? What do they understand by the divine? They're very happy going and doing some rituals and coming back, and they're very happy. I have done something. I have paid my debt to the divine. That's how mother puts it. People do meditation as if they were paying a debt to God. I have half an hour I meditated. Huh? Please, not my name. So average person is not bothered. So sometimes when I see this, I feel what's going to happen. Not worried about ki new creation is bound to come. But what is going to happen to this humanity? Sad it is for them. No doubt about the new creation. It's going to be. But collaboration would be so much wonderful. So Vivek asked me to collaborate in the timekeeping process. Thank you so much.